Welcome to Soul of an Empath, the podcast that helps empaths to feel loved, seen, heard, and understood in all areas of your life. Now here's your host, Tiffany Cano.
Hi, hi, this is Tiffany Cano here for another Knowing You show. I'm excited. We have a guest today, Adam Weber. He's coming at us from the East Coast, New York area. And let me tell you a little bit about him. Adam is the author of the best-selling book, Meditation, Not Medicine. And you know how much I love meditation. So I was personally attracted to this. And he's also the host of an acclaimed podcast called Meditation, Not Medicine. And Adam has dedicated his life to helping others learn to meditate so that they can reduce their stress without medications. Adam has been featured in Entrepreneur Magazine, as well as other national publications, numerous radio interviews, and podcasts as a recognized speaker and trainer who helps people to learn how to reduce their stress through highly celebrated meditation technique called SB5 Meditation Method. So thank you so much, Adam, for being here today.
Tiffany, thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful for you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So I just want to get started. You know that this is a Soul of an Empath podcast, and I know that you also relate to being an empath. How has that impacted your life? And especially, you know, being in New York, where there's a much bigger population than most other places.
Well, you know, Tiffany, growing up, I grew up really well as a son of a doctor. Always had everything I ever wanted as a kid, went to the best schools, went to private school before public school, always had the finest clothes, the finest things. While a student at The Ohio State University, I did an internship as a real estate appraiser, and which led me into a 32-year career as a real estate appraiser. And like a lot of careers, you start somewhere. And I would go to neighborhoods and I would see things that, frankly, they just not only surprised me, but they changed me.
How so?
Well, you know, you would see the way, again, living in a home where we didn't have a single housekeeper. We had two housekeepers. That's how big our home was. But I would go to the projects. I would go to very low income areas. In fact, I flew over to the West Coast in places like a Watts, where I was in the Midwest, also in places out in the suburbs of Chicago and Columbus, Ohio, and seeing the way people struggled, the way that people lived, and how it was so polar opposite of the way I was raised. I would go places and I'd have to catch my breath. I had never seen that before. I wasn't somebody who watched the news or anything like that.
How did it make you feel?
My heart got very heavy because I would see that there were people who were suffering. I would see that there were people who were in pain. I would see that there were people that were in need. Again, I grew up in a family with a mother, a father, a strong family. I would go to areas where might have been a single parent household. Not that there wasn't another parent, but that parent may have been not there, or may in some cases actually were in like jail or had died or something like that because of violence, not because of sickness or because of age. And I would hear these things and I would see these things and it just changed me.
Did it motivate you to live your life differently or be more of service?
It definitely did. Right from the start, as a member of my fraternity, we got more involved at our chapter dinners. I would talk about things I had seen because, again, I started as an intern. And we as a fraternity, instead of just having parties, we started being more of service to the community and helping others and volunteering. Got involved with the Harry Chapin, former artist who's since passed, foundation. And helping people. They used to have a Harry Chapin run every year, and we would go out into the community to help raise money for that, but to also help others.
Love it. And at what point in your life did you start getting into meditation? Like for me, I actually started in high school. I had a hippie friend. He was like the only person who was into spirituality and metaphysics at the time. And he gave me this book on like learning how to meditate. And then we would meet each other in the astral worlds and then talk about what we talked about the night before. It was so cool.
My early start with meditation, I had always thought of it as very, I guess you would say, woo-woo. Like, you know, there are perceptions around it. When I was in the corporate world, I had a lot of stress. So it had been recommended to me, but it never really caught on. And I think it was because it was not as mainstream where I was. And it wasn't looked at in such a positive light as it is now. Again, I'm 52. I spent 32 years working in big corporate America almost. And then when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and one of the first things they tell you, I already knew I suffered from my stress. I didn't just experience stress. I actually suffered from it. I've been with my wife almost 20 years. During that time, she's had cancer twice. It's been a stressful time. And it's not just about her. It was about work. It was about constantly traveling. It was about after my first son being born, Andrew, hearing his voice on the phone and not being able to see him, not being around as much as I wanted to be. So the stress was real. And then after the diagnosis, I talked to the doctor about it. And I happened to talk to a younger doctor about it who said, definitely, yes, you can help escape and reduce your stress with some exercise. And I do, I work out. But most people, because they see me sitting down, don't realize that I wear braces on my legs. So that was very stressful, being that, you know, I was in my late 30s already with a disability and saying, how could this happen to me? But meditation helped me to relax and to, I don't know, maybe feel safe and secure and just a way to escape that stress on a daily basis.
Would you say that being empathic, some of that stress was probably from other people that you absorbed and sponged up yourself?
Well, it's funny you say that. One of the things that a mentor had told me many years ago was to be a sponge. You are a product of your experiences. And as somebody who lives very heavily in the Jack Canfield world, I learned that it's not about how you react. You shouldn't react, but it's about how you respond. And being an empath, there's nothing wrong with it. At all. In fact, I think a lot of people could benefit from being more empathic and being conscious of the world, what's around them and the needs and the feelings of others. You know, we live in a very triggered society, whether it be politics or other things like that. When I see that they fight about, you know, what we're doing as a country or as a community to help others, I think if people actually got out there and took a look in their own neighborhoods, because it's not just in Democrat or independent neighborhoods, it's Republican, it's all sorts of neighborhoods. And if people said, look, there are moms, there are families who need health care, there are families who need child care. I've been very blessed to have had a successful career where I could afford those things. But there are a lot of people who can't. And my wife is a special education teacher, I think I said. And some of these kids don't do as well as my kids do because they haven't had the benefit of having things like early child care or having 3 square meals a day or having parents that had the ability to take care of them. It's definitely affected me. I believe it's changed my heart. It's definitely changed the way I look at things.
And how has your mindfulness journey evolved over time? I mean, as you said, like seeing what is happening out in the world when people just take off their blinders and like take a peek. I mean, you don't even have to go across the border or into third world countries, we can see quite a bit just by opening up our eyes and taking a little drive.
Yeah, it's in our own backyards. It's in our own backyards. I think that's where the story of even when I came back to New York permanently and stopped traveling, there are neighborhoods, especially in the 5 boroughs, where I would see things. And as a real estate investor myself, I've seen things that I think, disturbed me. Especially it would disturb me around times like Thanksgiving or Christmas, where I would say to I might be in a property and say, are these people going to have a proper Thanksgiving? Are they going to have a proper Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever? Because I knew that clearly they didn't have the means. So it affected me. It still does. I'm not somebody who likes to watch the news. If I'll put on television, it's to watch sports because I went to Ohio State. I like to watch sports. You can't help, though, because those games are not on at 6 or 7 in the morning when you're up. You know, I would put the news on and every morning you would hear about some sort of tragedy, whether it be a shooting or something else that's going on. And you say, why does it have to be this way? What can we do as a society, as a people to, because it's not about asking government even to help. It's about we as individuals helping each other and reaching out a hand to our fellow man, fellow woman, kids, and saying, what can I do to serve today? What little thing? I think if we all did a little bit every day, just one little thing, given, I don't know what the population is even anymore, 360 million or something. If 360 million people did one little thing every day, just smiling at somebody can have such a big difference in their lives. I mean, my oldest son, Andrew, has a friend who's walking home versus taking a bike home because he doesn't have a parent there. I'm not allowed to take the kid. But when I wave to him and say hello to him every day, just seeing his face light up, it means the world to me because the child knows somebody cares. I'm not allowed to do certain things. Would I love to be able to help more people in other ways? Yes. You know, just being able to, you know, say hi to a child, or they've had play dates where you see the kids come over and you want to make sure you feed the kids, you know, because you don't know what's going on in their home. I mean, you like to think that everything's great, that everybody's getting a full, you know, 3 full meals a day, but they don't put a shirt on the kids or a stamp on the kid and say, this is a kid whose family doesn't have the money. And even people do have the money, and we live in a nice area. During the pandemic, it's really affected society in a way I had never seen before, personally, up close, again, other than through my real estate world, because I would go to the real estate, do my job, and I'd come home at the end of the day. You know, we always eat here in my home. There's always something to eat. And if there isn't, we order in.
You know, I hired people, whether it was to do the Instacart shopping or gardening or like any little bit that I could do to give people a job, you know, during these tougher times. And it's been really rewarding to go out of my way in that regards. I've always been a humanitarian and a philanthropist. Like, I give monetarily. I do lots of service. Pre-COVID, I would also volunteer at like the soup kitchens. And gosh, just any time there's that chance to do something good for another, it can be so healing, so uplifting, so impactful on the ethers. You know, it's like energy can just come through you. So I love everything that you're saying. And can you talk to me more about what types of people you help and how do you help them?
Well, one through my synagogue, but also through the schools. And again, even if it's not that way, it's just a child coming over, that sort of thing, whether it be feeding them, donating to Goodwill or to the Salvation Army, whatever we can do to help provide to others, because there are a number of organizations that are out there. And I knew of the Salvation Army. I mean, being in New York City in Christmas time, you would see them out on the streets. But then many years ago, I heard the story of Tony Robbins, where he would drive trucks to give lots of meals to people around Christmas time. And now he gives 100 million meals a year. And you say to yourself, well, if Tony Robbins can give 100 million meals, I can give at least, you know, 100 or, you know, or 1,000 or whatever it is. Because when you're buying in that kind of quantity. But the point is, just even if it's that, my wife, my family, we're very big people as far as pets. I know that sounds to some people no, but we've adopted through the SPCA here. My dog Churchill is from Turkey, from the country of Turkey. But we always make sure that even the dogs and the cats around Christmas or other times of the years have plenty of toys, and they're always doing some sort of drive. So whether it's donating food or whatever it is, I mean, they just recently rebuilt a facility that we helped fundraise for. And we try with the kids, whether it be Little Leagues or other things like that, because a lot of times what that does is it, especially last year, the Little League, or I should say earlier this year, offset some of the kids who were unable to pay for it, for whatever reason they weren't, parents or things like that. And we've had thousands of people, unfortunately, here in New York, die during COVID. And there are plenty of kids who had lost a parent or lost a grandparent or lost a source of somebody helping them. So if we can step up and do that, we'll do it. My wife and I.
That's wonderful. Thank you for all that you're doing. In this last year and a half, I have done so many healing sessions for people with COVID. I think last year I kind of went through that phase of just feeling overwhelmed and a bit burnt out by doing it so much. That's, you know, not my favorite kind of client to help and serve, but we're in a freaking pandemic. So of course I'm going to do it because I have the skills to do it. But any way that people can step up and give from their heart space, they get an A+ in my book, you know, and brownie points and stars.
I would hold daily meditations for a while on Facebook, where I knew people could meet up using the tools I have like StreamYard. And then last year around the Christmas time, because I knew it was a really tough time, I did 30 days in a row asking people, listen, I didn't ask for a cent. I didn't want anything. It was just a matter of, hey, if you could just spend a few minutes with me every day, if you can learn the practice, if you can learn to help yourself, if you can just show up, you can invite a friend, invite a coworker. Because a lot of what I do is with the corporate world, because that's where I come from.
Yes. And you actually have a gift for us that is all about meditation. So can you tell us about your gift and how we can pick it up?
Yeah, I'm going to provide you with the link so where people can download. That way they don't have to worry about a physical copy or shipping or anything like that of my best-selling book, Meditation, Not Medicine. And if, you know, they so choose, there's nothing for sale or anything like that, is to join a Facebook group where they can meet up again. Coming up on Thanksgiving and stuff, I'm going to be a lot more active in doing regular meditations where people can learn to help themselves. Again, it's really about just, you know, spend a few minutes with me. It's like spending a few minutes with you, and people can learn to help themselves. There's nothing for sale. There's no money needed, anything like that. It's just about, you know, how can I help you? Because like you mentioned before, whether it be the Delta variant, or I don't know what the next one will be, or the craziness with the economy and things like that, or again, political unrest or whatever it is. But I think it's time where people need to take a seat. And if they haven't meditated, let me just say this as the former corporate guy, there's no woo-woo, not with what I do. No woo-woo. I've taken it all out. Just take a seat. For me, it's about helping people because one thing I found in the corporate world, for example, just an example, is that they were more about the business suits and things like that. And when they would see more traditional, you know, garb from other or dressing from other country, they would turn them off. Maybe because it was something that they had seen on TV or in a magazine. I had a cartoon created of myself meditating wearing a suit. So it's who I am. It's about helping to serve and helping others. In fact, where my wife went out and got me a statue of me sitting there meditating, that guy, I was before I cut my hair off during the pandemic, and my wife found out she really liked it with cut off. But it's really just about helping people learn to help themselves. You don't need hours. You don't need any fancy clothing or anything to do, but just to take a seat.
And how has visualization helped you? Do you use it to help heal the MS? Do you use it to help you be more successful in business? Talk to me about visualization and meditation.
Yeah, well, visualization for me was something that I didn't know as much about a number of years ago until I got into the Jack Canfield world and then learned that it's creating a picture in your mind and also using a vision board. And being able to look at it and imagining the things that I want on there, the home, the car, the gifts from my friends and family and my kids and things like that, and wellness. And yes, I was supposed to be in a wheelchair now. For me, I wear braces, but I visualize myself walking. I visualize myself doing things better than I was able to, exercising. But everything, like I said, I'm intent on picking up my kids. spending time with my wife and friends. And my wife says, "You're crazy. You're going to hurt yourself jumping up and down during that football game." She goes, "You got braces on your legs." And I go, "Yeah." And sometimes I fall, but I also visualize myself being able to just jump up and down and not fall. I visualize myself.
Stick the landing.
Yeah, stick the landing like a gymnast. Walk to the kitchen without falling. So the visualization, in my opinion, is key. If you want to manifest things in your life, visualization is very, very important. Being able to see it and believe it and watching it happen.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your generous heart and helping people to get more into meditation, because I do think that it is one of the things that will absolutely elevate the consciousness of humanity and our planet. So I am in love with anybody who loves meditation. And yeah, I really appreciate that. So please, everyone, pick up his free gift, Meditation, Not Medicine. And I'll put the link in the show notes so you can grab it there. Any final words for us, Adam?
I just like to tell people, take a seat, even if it's just for a few minutes every day. I'm somebody who meditates for usually a couple times a day for 20 minutes at a time. But even if you find yourself meditating for a few minutes every day, and again, as a father, I think help your kids learn to meditate, even if they can, as opposed to giving them a timeout if they misbehave, giving them a timeout to center themselves and calm down. You don't need to take pills for everything. You really don't.
It's so valuable to teach kids how to meditate. Like for me, I meditate every day. And pre-COVID, I would take 4 to 10 days off every quarter, and I would go on a meditation retreat at this place in the desert. Plus, I lead spiritual retreats in Italy and India, and you know, there's a ton of meditation there. And so, you know, for people who are new, as you said, if they could just start with a few minutes at a time and build up. You know, I didn't go from, you know, newbie to being able to meditate 4 hours at once. You know, like it takes some time to build up to that.
It's like any habit. It takes some time.
Yeah. We can build those spiritual muscles, those meditation muscles, and be like a pro athlete, you know, in spirituality.
They should also, if they don't, some athletes meditate, but if they don't, a lot of them should. It would help them improve their performance, their focus, and their general well-being.
Yeah, I've seen studies about that. The athletes who do meditate, they perform better. So, yeah. Well, thanks again, Adam. Much love and blessings and gratitude for all you do. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Soul of an Empath with Tiffany Cano. If you enjoyed this show, please rate and recommend it on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you are listening to it. You can get more information from soulofanempath.com. May you be blessed with love, health, peace, joy, spiritual oneness, prosperity and abundance. So be it. So be it. So be it.